Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining Dorsey Ross on this episode of The Dorsey Ross Show. In this episode, Dorsey interviews another special guest that will give you hope and inspire you.
Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining us on another episode of The Dorsey Ross Show. Today, we have a special guest with us. His name is Alan C. Paul, right?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. He's a podcaster, author, and creative coach at God and Gigs, podcast producer, husband to Leah for 25 years, and dad of three, homeschooled two kids through college, musician, multi-microbrand creative, and a family-focused solopreneur. Thank you, Alan, so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dorsey. I am so honored to be on the show and really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. So let's do a little icebreaker here. What is your biggest passion?
Oh, what a great start. Biggest passion. It is really hard to pick that. It's like picking your favorite child, right?
Right.
I mean, I always start with the kind of, like, if I don't start with my wife, if I don't start with God and my wife, I'm in trouble, right? So those are the safe answers. But I would say probably it is, to be honest, it is learning. I think that's my biggest passion. No matter what the space is, it's always about growing and learning. If there's something I can pull out of it, understand more deeply, that is kind of like my love language. It's being able to develop and understand more of whatever that thing is. So no matter what the thing is, music, you know, theology, whatever, if it's learning, I'm into it. So I would have to say that's my biggest passion.
Okay. What is a solopreneur? You mentioned that in your bio. What exactly is that?
Well, it's one of those buzzwords, I think, that I grabbed onto that seemed to describe me best, entrepreneur, right? There's entrepreneur, then there's faithpreneur and all the preneurs. As solopreneur, of course, goes that I don't necessarily have a team. It's me and myself in this office here. And I've thought about developing a team. I've thought about trying to become a bigger business, right? And having more people under my payroll, supposedly. But I think solopreneur describes me best because no matter what I build, it always comes back to what can I do under my, you know, my own strength, you know what I mean, with God's help, but without a lot of infrastructure. What can I do to continue to move forward in my business and in my creative pursuits without necessarily waiting for all the other things, capital, investment, staff? What can I do to simply just move the ball forward? And so I really consider myself a solopreneur. Because even if I eventually bring people on, I'm still, eventually it comes back to, you know, Alan C. Paul Creative Services, whatever you want to call it. It's about what can I do without necessarily waiting for other people. And that's kind of like, you know, where I think other creators like me, we end up finding ourselves in that same space. You got to just say, okay, no matter what happens, I got to make a decision. I got to be the business owner. And so that makes you a solopreneur.
Right. Yeah, I hear what you're saying there because I'm the same way. Me, myself, and I, you know, when it comes to podcasting, when it comes to ministry, you know, whatever that is, it's just me, myself, and I, and I don't really have anybody else helping me. You know, I got people, you know, giving me ideas or giving me advice on who to call, but it's just me, myself, and I.
Yeah. And I think one quick thing to put on that is that doesn't mean, you just said it, you can call on other people. It doesn't mean that you're an island, right? Being a solopreneur or a creative that doesn't necessarily have a team or employees doesn't mean that you don't have a team of people that are supporting you in a community. It's just that you don't necessarily make it an official thing where, I've heard some people say it like this, Dorsey. I've heard some people say that entrepreneurs build things that are bigger than themselves, right? So you incorporate, oh, you go out, you buy a business, and then you sell that business, and then, you know, someone else takes over this, and you got managers over here. And I think a lot of the people like us, even if we were to necessarily build a bigger business, we're not trying to build something bigger than us. We're trying to build something that supports everything that we want to do. And that's all we need. Like, I'm not trying to have, you know, a Jeff Bezos type organization. That does not what fuels me. And so, yeah, I think everybody, you know, we can build teams. We can have great communities and churches that support us. And that's more like a family, right? I think it's better to think of it like, yes, we're family oriented and we want communities. We just don't necessarily want the huge infrastructure of a business that doesn't support what we're really about.
Right. I was kidding with one of the ladies in Starbucks. I go to Starbucks sometimes and do editing on my podcast or, you know, make phone calls for ministry. And I was like, hey, you know, if I ever become, you know, the big podcast star, you can say, hey, I knew Dorsey Wang.
Exactly, right? And they all know. I think all of us have our coffee shop remote offices, and right. Yeah, that's where we all get started. So yeah, they'll be able to say the name you win.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do, and you know who you are.
Well, thanks so much again for this opportunity to talk about myself. It sounds so selfish even when you start talking about it, but I always start with four words: husband, father, creative, forgiven. That's the simplest thing. If you don't know anything else about me after this interview, that's all you need to know, that I am blessed to have my wife, as you mentioned, in the open 25 years now, that she stuck with this crazy guy that she picked. And my father, three kids, two of them that I homeschooled through all the way through college, me and my wife, and both of them still living at home, blessed to have, you know, my third one already out on his own. And so really what I'm all about, Dorsey, is how can I help people get where I got, and keep as much of it in terms of their faith, their creative life, and their principles as possible? And so God and Gigs, when I created that platform back in 2016, was all about just what was I doing? Well, I was playing music, I was in ministry, and I was trying not to lose myself in all of this buzz of be successful, get a record deal, or do this or do that and be famous. That didn't appeal to me. So what I really wanted to do is just try, okay, how do you put these things together in a life that doesn't crash and burn? And so really that's kind of what my life story was about, because I, you know, had severe mental health issues and issues with my family where I could have lost everything. And the only thing that kept me is the grace of God and some solid principles when it came to actually doing what I love, which is music and creative stuff. So yeah, that's kind of like a nutshell that, you know, all of the things that come to my life, I attribute to how God has rescued and saved me from myself, kept me from self-sabotage, and then allowed me to help other people who, you know, kind of just have all this stuff running at them full force. And how do you balance it so that you actually enjoy doing what God blessed you to do, which is most likely something that's not necessarily in the box of 9-to-5 work? You know, it doesn't really fit in ministry, just 9-to-5, or most of us, we love to do other stuff. And so how do you make it work in the context of, you know, of what this culture kind of like demands us to do, which is go into all the world and do different stuff around people that don't believe necessarily what we believe. So, yeah, that's kind of like a long story short of how I try to build up what I try to do now.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you homeschooled your kids all the way through college.
Yes. Well, up to high school, they got into college as of my daughter is the last one. She graduates this semester. So, yeah, we started them in first and second grade. I was actually a public school teacher. I always joke that I just lowered my class size. I went from 40, 50 kids to two. And at the time, I just felt God calling me. He said, you know, Alan, you got to be a better dad. You got to be there. And for some reason, I go to the extreme. So I said, okay, well, if I'm going to be a teacher and a dad, then I'm going to be the teacher and I'm going to be the dad. So my wife and I, of course, worked together, but I did a majority of it from my kids being first and second grade all the way through they graduated from high school. And again, now we're going to have two, now three, you know, college graduates. And by the way, I always like to say my oldest son didn't go to homeschool, but I like to call it family learning. I don't like to give it that, you know, oh, well, were you at home or were you, you know, in a public school? I consider it family learning because all three of them, we directed their education. That's the way I see it. Just happens that one of them stayed in public school. But the most important thing is that as a dad and as a mom, we wanted to be the central force guiding our kids' education. So wherever that happened, we wanted to be, you know, the main drivers of it.
Absolutely. What do you do in podcasting and what do you discuss on your show?
Well, the cool thing about God and Gigs, the God and Gigs show, which is my podcast, is it really does. It started as, like I just mentioned, when I started around 2014, 13, God kind of allowed me to start looking at gigging again. So gigging, as you probably can guess, is for musicians, it's, you know, the job where we go out there, we play the gig, we play the wedding, we play the local tavern, whatever, you know, whatever the musical thing is. And so I was up until that time, Dorsey, I was a full-time minister of music at a local church, and I didn't think God really wanted me to play secular music. So I was kind of thinking, okay, this is the stuff you're supposed to avoid. And then, but I have a bachelor's degree in music education and jazz performance. So I never used it. I used the music education, but never the jazz performance. And so then in 2009, 2010, I get the feeling and the call that God is saying, actually walk away from my music ministry and do something else. What's that something else? I have no idea. So around 2010, 2011, I stepped away from my full-time position and I started gigging again. And that's where I found out there's a lot of musicians and creatives that do what I do, go to church, but still play on Saturday night at the local gig. And there's no resources for us that I knew of. Nothing that said, hey, you can still, you know, feel like you are serving God without necessarily, you know, playing, you know, Jesus music 24/7. So I wrote a book about 2016 to try to help people. And then the podcast came after that where I said, okay, I got to talk to some of these people. So I got to interview some amazing creatives and musicians that did this all the time. People that played in the White House and they got Grammys and they have, you know, Stellar Awards, which is the kind of like the Grammy for gospel artists. And I got to interview all these great people that were in my circles. They just never talked about real life in the context of, yes, I'm a musician. Yes, I'm a creative. And yes, I love God. And yes, I perform in these secular spaces. So that's really what the podcast is all about, where I get to open up the doors to these people and say, hey, talk about what really happens when you're not on stage, when you're not, you know, on a platform. And how do you navigate this? So that's really what God and Gigs Show is all about. And I've been blessed to do it for about 150 episodes now.
Nice. That's awesome. How do you balance the two with, you know, working in secular music, but also, you know, doing ministry every weekend?
I love this question because it's one of the first things that pop up as soon as you tell people that, oh, yeah, you know, it's almost like on my Instagram, I have to be careful about saying minister this or pastor this. And then they see the very next thing is somebody singing a quite suggestive song about, you know, and, you know, part of me immediately goes to, well, have you ever read Song of Solomon? Like, have you do you know that the Bible is very clear about love and all the other parts of life? The Bible would be X-rated if it were actually played out in a, you know, we know The Chosen did a pretty good job, but the Bible does not hide away from these themes. And so kind of like used as a caveat, creatives should not feel like they're in a box when it comes to what we perform and what we create. We don't go to only Christian plumbers. We don't go to only Christian doctors. We don't go and check your Bible verse before we go to the gas station. We are in the world, but not of the world. So I've always made sure to first start with that, you know, I love this philosopher, Abraham Kuyper, that says, there is nothing over which the sovereign Lord does not cry mine. So if it all belongs to God already, he gives us the freedom to perform and to create and to live and to work in this world and to serve him, even as we walk inside and outside of the what's called, I guess, the secular culture, right? The mainstream culture. So that's my first answer, is that we're called to be light and salt. And salt doesn't just go into other salt. Salt goes into the meat. Salt goes into other things that doesn't look like salt. And so we're called to walk into those spaces. Now, of course, do you have to be discerning about how you perform and how you work and how you, what you play and what you, yes, but that's what communities like God and Gigs is about, just to help us make the right decisions so that we never compromise our faith. That's the byline of my book, you know, how to succeed as a musician without sacrificing your faith or compromising your faith. But I don't believe that we compromise our faith simply by walking into a performance and playing music. Because at that point, we may glorify God by the way we perform and doing it in an excellent manner, not necessarily the subject matter. Someone might look at me and just say, hey, you just did that with such joy. How are you even keeping that together when I know what's going on in your life? I've had more ministry moments, to be honest with you, not to say like church is not important. Of course, church is the most important. But I've had just as much ministry moments backstage behind gigs as I've had in on stage at a platform.
And that was going to be my next question. You know, how have you used, you know, the secular music part of it as a witnessing tool, and what was that like?
I'll give you a story. One of the best ones I can remember is actually we got to perform. I guess I can mention the artist. I don't know if I want to, you know, name drop and all that kind of stuff. But it was a major artist in the 90s, I guess 2000s, and she was doing her reunion tour. I guess you could say her rebirth tour or something like that. And we got to be the gospel choir. And I wasn't even performing necessarily. I got to help direct the gospel choir that was going to sing behind her. And one of her background singers, this major artist, was our coach. So we're back there behind the American Airlines Arena at the time, Miami Arena, big arena. And we're just so excited. We're getting ready to go out there. There's going to be thousands of people. We're going to be the background choir. And this young lady just started coaching us and then started weeping because she felt lost. I don't know what the situation was in her family, but she was up there getting ready to back up. I just have to say the name because I'll keep skipping over the name and I'm trying to get it right. But the initials are MC. Okay. So MC.
Okay.
So she's backing up MC and she just starts weeping. And our choir, me specifically, I guess, in a sense, because I was leading the choir, right? So I was the minister on staff, I guess. We just start praying for her at that moment behind stage. We're about to go perform whatever you want to call the songs, right? Godly, not godly. But that background singer needed a family, a community of faith at that moment. And we were there. We weren't just a background choir. We were the kingdom of God. We were the hands and feet of Christ at that moment where that background singer needed to perform. She had to get it together. I think it was like hours before the show. So she had to get it back together and be up there and smiling and clapping and wearing her dress. She had to look the part by the time. She couldn't lose her job over this, right? So we had to help her get it back together. But that prayer, I believe, blessed her at a time that she couldn't get to a church. So that's really what it's evangelism, what I call evangelizing through your gift in my book, is what it's all about. It's being ready to be the hands and feet of Jesus in places that, you know, just like Jesus did when it wasn't necessarily the pastor or the minister or the corporate body necessarily available for the people who need it most.
What's the best advice a mentor ever gave you about the music industry?
That's a great question. The best advice. I'm going to have to like just kind of throw some out here because there are so many that flood my mind even as you just said that question. One of the first ones is not necessarily advice from a mentor, but a quote that really helps guide me. And it comes from... I believe it's Van Morrison. And he said, music is spiritual. The music business is not. And that reminds me every time I think of that quote that yes, music will always, and you know, creative life will always have a spiritual component. There's many creatives that don't necessarily even follow God that understand this is a spiritual thing. You cannot be in the creative process, which is God's creative process. He's the one that invented creation because he is the creator. So there's no way that you can be involved in this and not be involved in something spiritual. But when you get into the business side, a lot of that spiritual stuff unfortunately drops out because people don't really treat the business the way they should with the golden rule. What you do unto others as you have to do unto you. There's a lot of cutthroatness. There's a lot of pettiness. And so probably everybody that I can think of in the business that's helped me with that kind of advice, I could think of a couple of the guys. Trent Phillips, who's a great mentor of mine, has basically echoed the same thing. He said, be sure you know what you're called to before you walk in. So if you're a ministry type person and you're called to ministry, basically what he was saying when he talked to me about this, it's okay to stay in ministry. It's okay not to be an artist. It's okay not to go into secular music. It's okay to be in the local church. But then some of us, maybe our place isn't just a local church. And so you got to know your call to that. Just know to bloom where you're planted and to be very aware of what God has called you to do and not to kind of just seek after, oh, I just want the lights and the fame, because maybe you're not called to that. And that grace God gives you will not keep you in a different place where he hasn't planted you to go.
Yeah. You mentioned Dan Morrison. Is he a Facebook friend or he... a musician or?
Oh, Van Morrison is one of the most famous songwriters. And then the song Moondance.
I think of.
Yeah, Moon Dance is one of his most famous songs. I think he's still alive. And he's a super, super famous in terms of songwriting. And I just remember that quote being one of the first ones that popped out of my head when I hear people say, well, you know, what's the advice would you give people? And that's the hardest thing to remember is that, yes, you love music. Yes, you love to create. Yes, you love all the, but the business side is, it can cut you, hurt you, and it can make you feel like God didn't call you to this at all. And so, yeah, that's one of the first things that popped in my head. But Van Morrison, I wish he was a personal friend, but no, he's just a famous songwriter.
Has anybody ever said to you, you know, you could keep, you know, specifically to Christian music, you couldn't be going out to the secular world and singing? And what would you say to others that may be listening that say, hey, you know, this guy has a great point. You know, I can go out to, you know, other, you know, non-Christian venues and speak and sing and maybe even minister. What would you say, you know, has anybody ever said it to you? And what would you say to others that may say, hey, this is a great idea?
Well, I thank you for that. Again, great question, because I'll start with the first part where you said there's some people who might think it's not right. Okay, so to those people, I'm always careful not to become argumentative, right? Sure. Because there are clearly lines that we should be aware of. There are clearly places where the Bible, you know, does not call us to try to be like the world. Okay, so I want to be careful. As soon as I say yes, you should be able to go out and have freedom, you know, like Galatians says, you know, we stand in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free. So we're able to walk in liberty in the world and create in the world. But I would say the first word I would say is that everyone that says, oh, well, you shouldn't perform this way, I would just remind them that the Holy Spirit lives in all of us. And it's the Holy Spirit that guides and provides that guidance. And he says that he will guide us into all truth. That includes what should you perform and play and when you should step away from certain, even in terms of your corporate jobs, Dorsey, whatever job you do, right? Whatever you do, Bible says, do it all to the glory of God. So if your job doesn't necessarily glorify God because your boss doesn't glorify God or the advertising campaign or whatever thing you're working on doesn't glorify God, well, how do you do that? That's where you got to pray. Holy Spirit, show me and guide me and direct me. So how do I navigate this? So that you can actually bless God in the midst of a culture that doesn't. So that's the first thing I would say to anybody that says you shouldn't do this. I always remind them, hey, musicians, it's just one job. We all have jobs. We all are called to work. I would direct them actually to some other resources, some authors like Jordan Rayner. I love following Jordan Rayner. He has a book about this called Call to Create. He talks about this as well. And I would advise them to check some of his stuff out because I love his stuff on worship and work. Now, to those who want to do it, probably the same thing. Discernment. Don't jump out and say, oh, okay, God called me to minister and to be a, you know, I hate using the word secular because I think secular is almost like a world construct because, again, God owns it all. But I would say to them, just know you're called. I have a part of my book that's also called Establish Your Priorities. I remember when I first started music, Dorsey, I got a chance to perform for another big artist. I won't name her because she's not as popular right now, Gladys Knight. I got an opportunity. I could have been auditioned for her band. But at the time, I was about to get married and I already had a son and I had a son possibly on the way. And I said to myself, this world of music and touring is not going to work with me becoming a husband and the father that I'm supposed to be. And I said no to that audition. So that was an opportunity for me to step into a big stage, right? I could have gone for it. I could have. This is my big break. And I turned it down because I knew now, thank God, 25 years later, I knew I made the right decision. So that's the key. Not just looking for the, looking for the God to bless this big platform. Maybe your first ministry needs to be that local church. Maybe it needs to be making sure you're the best husband and wife to your children, and then work out your creative space, and God will bless that as you seek his kingdom first. So that would be my advice. Don't do it just for the fame, and don't do it just because you think God needs to give you a big audience to go out into other non-church atmospheres. Just make sure you're doing it for the right reasons.
And I, you know, you were saying, you know, a Bible verse popped into my head. You know, everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial.
Beneficial, absolutely. Paul said that, absolutely.
What have you learned from working in the secular music industry that people should know?
First, I think they should know it's not glamorous. I have a phrase that I've been thinking of lately. It's been popping to my head. It might look glorious, but it's not glamorous. Okay, there is a lot of glory that goes into, you know, even if you're not necessarily on a big stage, but just having crowds clap for you and, you know, going to play like, you know, with particular artists. For me, I'm a what they call a session or backing musician. I don't stand in front of people. You know, I'm more like the supporting. So I don't necessarily have to worry about people necessarily clapping for me that much. But there's a lot of ego that can come into this, right? And so what I think people need to know is that that's just when we're on stage. The rest of it is pretty mundane. We're getting up for tours. We're getting up in the, you know, airports. We're flying here, flying there. A lot of packing, a lot of practice, a lot of waiting, a lot of, you know, what may see. Again, the glorious part is when people get on stage and they see the big stars. The part they don't see is the struggle of trying to make it. And just like most industries, you don't see the iceberg underneath the water. You only see the very tip.
Yeah.
And all that stuff underneath that makes it very, very hard. And again, you say secular music industry. This is the same for Christian music artists as well. Like, it's not that much. Actually, I would say it's not really different at all for Christian artists in the industry. If it's industry, once you put the word industry on it, it's industry. It's a design to make money. It's designed to kind of crank out things, and it can become like a factory mindset, and it can eat away at your creative life. That's one thing I would tell everybody that's like interested or thinking about, okay, what's it really like in there? It's like, yeah, it's an industry. It's hard work. And the only part you get to see usually is the glamorous side when people are up on stage and they're dressed up and they look good. The rest of it is pretty much just as tough as any other job you want to name.
Yeah, with what you're saying there, there's a Christian artist that's very well known. You know, she's done a couple albums already. And I you know, people on Facebook, you know, they question, you know, whether or not she's actually a Christian just because of some interviews that she's done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the little clips that they show on Facebook or on, you know, social media, you know. And it's like, really? Come on. You know, you don't really know the person. You don't know her or him personally. How can you say whether or not, you know, they're a Christian or not?
Yeah, it's sad that this, obviously social media has done that, but they did the same thing back in the Bible days, right? They did the same thing with Jesus. Oh, he's a friend of sinners. He's a glutton. He's a drunkard, because they simply looked at where he was and his environment and to try to determine his character from his environment. And that's a great point, Dorsey, by the way, you mentioned that we have to be so careful not to let the noise of what other people say about our testimony be the thing that affects our testimony. Like, if you're called to a certain place and you need to be performing there or say this or sing this or minister there or speak here, and God says go, you can't be worried about the crowd. That's the first thing. That's the fear of man. The fear of man brings a snare, right? So I think a lot of us, we have to be careful. Social media has amplified it, you know, 10,000 times. But yeah, unfortunately, for whether you are, you know, they say, I guess Andy Warhol said there's 15 seconds of fame or whatever. Now we all get 15 seconds of fame and we get a lifetime of trolls chasing us after we get our 15 seconds of fame. And so we got to just be aware that, hey, if God's called you to something, don't let the critics and people, you know, as long as you're you stay true to what God called you to. And for a lot of artists, I know that's probably the toughest thing, because you got to kind of like shut off the noise, and it's got to be difficult.
Absolutely. How do you keep your family and mental health a priority when you're working hard to make an impact?
This is really my bread and butter. This is my life right there. Trying not to let the hustle, the desire for success, even for my family, right? I want my family to be successful. But if I burn the candle at both ends, if I'm working too hard, if I'm not taking time to really rest, that's the hardest one for me, Dorsey. I literally, before this interview, went and took my power nap just to make sure that I was fresh, because if you just burn in and go, and like you just mentioned, even at the beginning of being a solopreneur and doing all the things, right? We end up becoming lesser versions of ourselves. And so all I want to give and do for the kingdom and for my family turns out to like not be that great because I didn't prioritize taking care of myself. We just did a study talking about how Jesus used his time. And Jesus was extremely, I mean, he rested in the boat in a storm and was asleep. How much more does that tell you how much he values sleep and rest and of course, time with his father and solitude. So I'm preaching to myself right now, by the way, not to anybody else. That is so important because if you don't say, hey, I'm going to put aside time to focus on my mental health. And yes, that does include therapy. Yes, it does include having counselors, all of those things. And I've gone through all those, been through it. You name the mental issue, I've probably gone through it. Okay. I don't need to go down the list and you know, pump myself up as, oh, look at what I've overcome. It's just real. You know, depression is real. Suicidal tendencies are real. And did I face it? Yes, but only because the grace of God and the fact that I realized I needed help. It is not, it's not okay to think everything is okay. Like, that's not, it's all right to say, hey, number one, Lord, I need you. And Lord, number two, I need other people to come alongside me. And especially in ministry, we can kind of get a little bit where we assume that it's just all God. But when God said, "And confess your faults to one another that you may be healed," it's got to be a community. So that's been huge for me, my church family, as I mentioned, you know, outside resources, and just getting quiet time and just learning how to be quiet and be still in my own thoughts and not race to the next thing to fill the space so that I would feel productive.
Right.
So that's been helpful for me.
As we get ready to end here, I've got a couple more questions, but what is the biggest misconception people have about your field of expertise?
The biggest misconception I would probably say is, and I'm going to speak, you know, depending on who's listening right now, this might be for you or this might be not directed at you. You know, all solopreneurs and internet content creators, podcasters, like, this is a real job. That's the one I would think I would say. It is really hard to explain to people, even when you're a musician and they're like, oh, I wish I could be a musician. Oh, it must be so much fun. And as I mentioned earlier, this is hard work. It is not the same as a 9-to-5 necessarily, even though I do have 9-to-5 hours a lot now for my other, I help my church's podcast now. I'm on staff there. So I have office hours and I have to balance that out. So I think the key is, the one misconception that everyone should have is that there's one right answer. There's one way to run your life. There's one way to organize things so that you can have your faith and your creative life and your family. There's no one way. There's no silver bullet. There's no one answer. You've got to get around people that help you see the total package. And here's how it can work for you. Here's how you can explore that creative pursuit. Start that little business on the side and be there with your family. You need other people around to help you because if you just read the book and think that the book is going to give you all the answers, I mean, the Bible's got all the answers, but even the Bible says, hey, you got to have the multitude of counselors for safety. So I just say, hey, the one misconception is it's easy. It's not easy, but it can be done if you have other people around you. So that would probably be the answer to that.
How can, if people are interested in connecting with you or, you know, maybe getting a book from you, how can they connect with you?
Oh, well, thank you again, Dorsey. This has been such a great conversation. I really enjoyed this. And if people want to connect with me, number one, they need to follow your show and subscribe to your show right now. If you haven't hit that button, that is very silly of you. You should have already been following. But number two, if you want to connect with me, you can go to godandgigs.com. And the quickest way, honestly, is to follow my podcast. Since you're already listening on a podcast, I would say just go to godandgigs.com/podcast and you'll find all of our links to everything else, our website, our blog. My book is there, God and Gigs, and our devotional, Your Art, God's Heart, 21 Days for Creatives, for a devotional for them. So all those resources are there. So I would direct them to the podcast since they're already here, and then go to godandgigs.com for everything else related to faith-focused creators who want to build a better life from the inside out.
Welcome. Do you travel? Where are you from? And Now, and we never really touched on that, but where do you live?
I'm down here in South Florida. I live in North Florida. North of South Florida. Crazy word to say. North of South Florida. What was that? But anyway, I'm living in South Florida and, been Florida most of my life. And, we've been here about 30 years or so in the Sunshine State.
Awesome. Do you travel outside of the state to sing?
I am a homebody, Dorsey. This is one of the things that I've always said in terms of my the reason I interview so many different people that have traveled the world is because I don't travel much. I get vicariously. I get to enjoy it by talking to other people that have gone over the place. I am open to speaking. I'm open to like traveling, and I've done a little bit of it. But yeah, it's very funny. I very much consider myself a local musician, a local church musician, a local guy. Like I enjoy that. And I want to get on a plane when I absolutely have to, but I'm open to it. I'll be speaking at Orlando. I'll be speaking at the PodFest coming out soon. I don't know when this will air, but I'll be able to go there in Orlando. And yeah, I would love to travel a little more now that my kids are older. My wife is a traveler, by the way. So she's kind of waiting for it. She's waiting for me to get out of my homebody ways and move around a little more.
Do you have any albums on iTunes or Spotify?
I actually do. And this is another one of those funny things. I talk to people about marketing and then I never mention my own stuff, like ever. It's so weird. It's such a weird thing. I would say there's two albums I would point people to. One would be my church has just released a worship project. So that I'm very proud of. I was able to be a member of that, Metro Life Worship. And we just released a project called Overcome, and it's amazing. Pastor Mary Alessi and Stephanie Alessi, they're...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're...
I know those names.
Yep, that is my church and ministry, and I'm so blessed to be serving under them and Pastor Steve and Mary. So that would be where I pointed to, because I got to be a part of that, and that was an amazing record. That is, I don't care if I was on it or not. It's a really, really great record. And I do also have a solo record, which I've never really put out, but yeah, it's called Unclassified with 2 Z's. I'll give you the link later because it's hard to spell. It's almost hidden on purpose, but I did put that out in 2014, but it's funny how I don't talk about it at all. It was my first record, and I learned the thing you talked about. I learned how hard it really is. That's why I focus more on teaching instead of having to do it. Because when you have to put an album out, it is tough. It is not the easiest thing. So, yeah, I focus more on helping other creators who are doing it now.
That's great. Well, Alan, thank you so much for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate having you.
Dorsey, it's been an honor and a pleasure. And, again, appreciate you so much. God bless.
Absolutely. Well, guys and girls, thank you again for joining us on another episode of the Dorsey Ross Show. Please like and share and check out Alan's information. And until next time, have a great day. God bless.
Thank you again for joining Dorsey Ross on this episode of The Dorsey Ross Show. Please like, share, and tell others about the show. Also, please check out the other podcast episodes. And if you would like, donate to this podcast and buy Dorsey a coffee. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.